We know that video is important for artists' careers, and especially platforms like TikTok and Reels are very instrumental in getting your music out there. But how do you do it well? How do you create videos that people even want to watch? Well, on today's episode, we're going to be talking to an artist that goes by the name Glasses, who's created an enormous amount of viral videos with just him and a keyboard. And we're going to break it all down right now.
You're listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY.
Musician.
Podcast.
Hey there, and welcome to episode number 298 of the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, where on today's episode, we're going to be talking about promoting your music with videos that actually go viral. And I'm excited about this one. My name is Kevin Bruner, and joining me is Chris Robley. Chris, we've got a great interview coming up with Gil, who goes by Glasses. His artist name is Glasses.
Yeah, I'm really excited. I've actually made music with Gil in a project. He's an amazing musician. I'll sing his praises later. But he also makes amazing viral video content. He's got like 500,000 followers across TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube. So he'll share his tricks with us.
Yeah, it's going to be a good one. You know, we've joked in the past, in recent episodes, like, you're not going viral. And I think a lot of times that's in reference to that era where everyone thought, I'm going to make viral videos. That's our strategy to go viral. And most of it was just taking stabs in the dark, where I think what we'll get in today with Gil is that there's some actual things, some trial and error, some things you can do that work, and some tips and tricks to make sure your videos are seen by more people. And the more you learn, the more you start to see how when you do it right, it'll spread more and more and more.
Yeah, what's that saying? Like, luck comes to those who are ready or something? I don't know. His butt off and he learns from his mistakes, and we'll get into all that.
Yeah. It's going to be a good one. But before that, we need to mention, we mentioned it many times, but it's time to get your ticket for the DIY Musician Conference. It's just $99. I was shooting a video last night, Chris, for the conference that people may see online, and I was just blown away how much you actually get from the conference for $99.
For $99.
It's a screaming deal.
And in fact, you use the, like, that's less than the price of a cup of coffee. message.
Well, I said some of you are spending more on coffee every month than this, and the idea that oftentimes as artists, we say, oh, I'm all in my music career. Oh, $99 for a conference? I don't have any money. But then they're spending $150 on Starbucks all month long. And you're like, no, put your money where your mouth is. This is the weekend to go be all in for your music career. And so that's, yeah, I was thinking, man, I want to be all in for my music. I'm going to be there. It's going to be great. And it's only $99. It's a steal.
Through the end of the month.
You're going to get through the end of the month. April 30th, the price will go up $50. So why pay $50 extra for something you can get now for $99?
And if you get it now, you will be an early bird ticket holder, which is what qualifies you to apply for showcases and open mics and all the kind of performance stuff that's happening.
Yes. And there's a lot of great stuff. We are some things that we're doing, you know, when I was going through making that video, thinking about there's things that we've changed. We're making it more central to the hotel. So staying in the hotel is going to be the place to be, and so much stuff happening there. There's going to be more interactive type sessions that we're working with people to have around video and live streaming. And we're going to have a podcast room. And then we have so many good content announcements coming up that we can't make yet, but people from all the major tech platforms that you care about are going to be there, and you can ask them questions. The great thing about our conference is so many of the people that speak and are there, they hang out the whole weekend. And so it's not like some conferences where an industry professional like slips in the back door, goes on stage, says something, then leaves immediately. It's like people hang out, they're accessible, they're there for you, and it's going to be a great weekend. So $99, DIYMusicianCon.com, only a couple weeks left before that price goes up. So get locked in now.
And just to reminisce about one of those examples is sometimes the keynote speakers even hang out all weekend. And the last time we did this, it was 2019 before the pandemic. DMC from Run DMC was there pretty much the whole weekend hanging out.
Yeah.
He gave an amazing talk, which was like, honestly, I cried during it. It was so moving. And then afterwards, he was at like this booth or table or whatever with a line of people that was literally 3 or maybe 4 hours long. Like he said, hello, hugged, had a conversation with everyone. He was so generous. So, you know, I can't promise every keynote speaker will be that available, but it happens. And he was amazing.
He was there all weekend too. He was there the day he didn't speak and he was just hanging out. He wanted to be accessible. And he was also just, you know, interested in talking to artists as well. So yeah. Be there in Austin, August 26th through 28th. It's going to be worth it. I can't wait. I can't wait.
Me too.
All right. So we've got, how are we going to start this off, Chris? Are we watching a video? Or are we pulling?
Yeah, I've got a video that Gil posted on Instagram. And let me play that first. So people, this kind of isn't his main type of video that he makes now, but I still like it as a starter. And for people who are just listening and not watching on YouTube, he's doing this entirely with one hand. So everything you hear, he's doing live with one hand.
I'll remember my first reel, which was this Mario cover.
Me, Mario!
Well, that wasn't a perfect take. I haven't played it since recording it months ago, but I got so many comments on this saying, it's fake, he's not really doing it. So, you know, normally I ignore those comments, but after a while it starts to get kind of annoying, especially when a lot of people read that and believe it. So I just wanted to break down how I do this real quick. I have two sets of kick and snare right here and right here. And the reason for this is so I can reach it from this part of the keyboard and this part of the keyboard as well. Otherwise, I'd have had to stretch my fingers like crazy, which would probably be impossible. As for the keys, this is a mono synth sound, meaning that even if I accidentally hit two keys at the same time.
All right. Man.
He has some amazing finger dexterity.
And like, mental like dexterity.
I would have made it. Even trying would have made a mess out of all of that. But but watching his fingers, it seems like they just fly and they land in the right spot every time.
Dude's good. Let's get him on and ask him all about his
All right.
Video making. All right. We're here with Gil Asayas. And before I even let you speak, Gil, I want to compliment you. Our mutual friend Anders asked me to do a Peter Gabriel tribute show. And he's like, it's going to be great. We got a huge stage and projection mapping and this amazing band. And he listed all the players, but he hadn't said who was playing the keyboards. And you know, he had two guitars, extra percussion. I said, well, who's playing keyboards? He's like, oh, I got this guy, Gil. And I said, you hired one person to do the keyboards of a Peter Gabriel show? This is going to be a disaster. And he said, no, trust me. So with some skepticism, I decided to at least not argue with him. And then I showed up for the first rehearsal that I attended, and you were there with just two hands, basically holding down like three parts at least, all the sounds dialed in. You're definitely best keyboard player I've ever had the privilege of sharing the stage with, but that's not even really why we're here to talk to you, because you also make amazingly entertaining viral content, video content.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, that gig was so much fun. It feels like a lifetime ago, but I man, that was like one of my favorite gigs ever. That was just amazing.
I saw that show.
Oh, you were there or you saw
the
video?
Yeah, I saw it. No, I saw it. I was there.
Cool.
Chris is doing Peter Gabriel. I'm going to be there.
We got to do it again. It's like, it has to happen
again. I hope so. I know. But I'm amazed by you because you're a monster musician and you're like, your music theory mind is amazing. And that was the context in which I knew you. But then in the years since, it's like you've been able, that stuff is still at the forefront of your TikTok and reels and stuff. It's on display, but it's like also entertaining in other ways and funny. And I don't know. I'm kind of amazed that you bridged the musical genius with just what works on social.
Thanks. So I think it was kind of a happy accident, to be honest. You know, it's like, I like trying stuff and then some stuff doesn't work. And then when I find something that does work and I enjoy making it, I'm like, I'll just keep doing this for a while, you know,
till it stops working. What was the first accident that led you on that path?
Well, I mean, if we're talking about my recent videos, which is the MIDI art stuff, you know, like I never intended for it to be a thing I do regularly, but I just like tried it. I enjoyed it and the videos went viral. So I was like, oh, people like this. I'll just keep doing it, you know. I think like experimentation is key with this stuff.
Yeah. Well, I guess if we back up a little bit, I also want to mention that you have this balance between creating those sorts of videos. You make your own music, your original music. You tour with people, like you've been on the road with Todd Rundgren. You seem to have endorsements and sponsorships. Can you want to talk a little bit about just like the balance between all those things?
Yeah, well, I do my best to like make time for everything. It isn't always easy, especially with like the nowadays, the way you're expected to be a content creator. You know what I mean? It's like you're expected to be releasing stuff constantly. So when I go on tour, I have to kind of like try and stockpile some stuff in advance, like work extra hard before the tour, not just to prepare for the tour, but like to make extra content. So I'm not like posting nothing for 2 months, you know? So it's definitely difficult. And I don't always manage to do all that. Sometimes you'll see like months where I only post like once every 2 weeks or something, but I do my best to balance everything. I do what I can. Yeah.
In your mind, do you have a priority, like one thing that is more important than everything else?
Well, I'd say, yeah, my original music is always the most important. Like, my goal is always to get people to listen to my original music. And I feel like with the other stuff I do, like, that's kind of maybe an ad for my music in a way. That's not the only reason I do it. I do enjoy it. But if a person checks out my reels or my TikToks and then ends up listening to my music on Bandcamp or on Spotify, that would be my main goal, I'd say.
Do you have a sense of how that funnel works, like what percentage of people who come in for the viral stuff like end up listening on Spotify or whatever?
Probably like 0.0002%. It's very hard to get people to leave a platform and go to another platform. It's like really a lot harder than I ever thought it would be.
Yeah, well, they do that well. They get us to stick around on those platforms.
Yeah, the thing these platforms hate most is people clicking out of them. So they do everything in their power to prevent that.
Well, I also wanted to bring up one thing from your history that to me seemed like the first thing that you did, or at least it was the first big thing you did in video, which is before TikTok duets were even a thing, you kind of did a YouTube duet with T-Pain, right?
Yeah. Well,
do you want to give the backstory on that?
Yeah. So it's kind of long, but I'll try to tell it succinctly. Is that the word? Is that how you pronounce? Anyway, so T-Pain, I started posting my stuff on Reddit like a few years ago, and one of the posts did really well on Reddit, started climbing up the pages there. And T-Pain apparently is a Reddit user, and he saw that video and he commented, "Holy shit, man, let's work together," something like that. And at first I thought it was not really him, but then people kind of confirmed that it's really T-Pain. So I hit him up and we started chatting. Eventually he invited me to kind of hang out with him in a studio in LA for a couple of days, and which was really fun. So I met him and we recorded some stuff. None of that stuff ended up ever getting released. I think he lost all those files, he told me. But
T-Pain clearly doesn't listen to the DIY Musician podcast. Yeah, back up your files, T-Pain. Man.
He said his assistant spilled vodka on the computer. That's what he said.
Oh my gosh.
But anyway, so nothing happened after that. But then like maybe a couple of years later, I sent him, we kind of stayed in touch for a while, and I'd send him some musical ideas every now and again. Hey, you want to do something with this? And he'd always be super nice. He'd be like, oh yeah, that's dope, man. And then he'd do nothing, you know? So I just kept sending him stuff, hoping that one day he'll like something enough to actually want to collaborate. And of all things, like I was doing these Super Metroid covers. Metroid is a video game for those who are not familiar with it. So I was covering like these tracks from the game, and I sent him a cover. And to my surprise, he like recorded vocals the next day, sent me stems. He wrote his own lyrics and stuff, which I thought was awesome. Sent me a video. And yeah, I edited it together on YouTube, and that was really fun. It's kind of random, but fun.
Now, the thing that initially caught his attention, didn't you set music to his Tiny Desk performance where he was like really stripped down? Wasn't that how it all
right,
got
so
kicked
that, off? Right, so that's after he commented on Reddit and said he wanted to work with me, and I wanted to kind of get his attention again because like he kind of stopped responding after a while. So that's why I did that. I took like his Tiny Desk concert, just 2 minutes of it, and I played over it. And that video went viral. That was probably my first really viral video. Got to the first kind of the top of the front page on Reddit and stuff, which was not expected. I kind of did it to get his attention, but it ended up getting a lot more attention, so which was cool. And I guess that it worked because then he wanted to work with me.
Definitely a lesson about persistence in there.
I guess.
Well, okay, cool. Let's maybe we'll dive into how you think about making Instagram or TikTok videos. Do you have some words you can share about what accommodations you need to make for different platforms, if at all?
Yeah, so it seems like all the platforms recently are copying each other. They're all basically trying to copy TikTok. So I'm constantly learning like what works and what doesn't work. So I think it's really important if you're making short form content nowadays, you got to grab people like instantly within the first second of the video. And unfortunately, what I discovered, at least with my music, it's just music videos of just music, which sounds terrible to say like just music. But unfortunately, that doesn't work. Like you make a video of yourself playing or singing, it can be the greatest piece of music in the world. Like it doesn't matter. People are just going to keep scrolling. Unfortunately, that's just the way it is. So you need something extra. You need something that'll grab people instantly. And then most importantly, get them to watch all the way through, which is the hardest part. Because that's what makes a TikTok go viral. It's the watch time. So if you can get people to watch the whole thing, then your video will spread to millions of people. And I've tried all kinds of things. And the only thing that's worked for me so far really is the MIDI art. Sometimes other types of videos where I like talk about something can be engaging if the topic is really engaging. But yeah, if you just make a video of yourself playing or singing, good luck with that. It's really, really hard to get people to watch that.
So you're talking about those first couple seconds, which is very true. In fact, I was going through some content training and they said, if you can't do something in the first 3 seconds that people care about, why even make the rest of the video?
Because
it's not going to go anywhere. So what do you feel like this thing you settled on, what do you think why it's grabbing? Because I know some people might look at your videos, they have a consistent look to them and they might think, oh, I'll just copy what Gil's doing. But at the same time, it may not work. But what do you think is the thing that's grabbing people from your videos that have worked?
Well, the MIDI art has a visual component to it. You know, I'm drawing a picture with a keyboard. Mm-hmm. So I think that kind of appeals to a lot more people than only maybe musicians or people don't even have to like the type of music I'm playing necessarily. But the fact that I'm drawing a picture, I think that kind of sparks a curiosity in people and they want to see what happens. They want to see what it ends up looking like. So that grabs them and then they want to see the picture. Most of the time, like not all of them go viral, you know, some of them don't. So
that's really a good point too, about like you're considering how this content appeals to people beyond the music. So like you said, they don't even have to like that genre or even be particularly interested in keyboard music, but now they're sucked in because there's this suspense that literally is unfolding across the entire video.
Exactly. And with TikTok, you never know who's going to see your video. That's the thing. It's like you could have, like right now, I've got a lot of followers. I've got 150,000 followers, but I don't know who's going to see the video. It could be a follower. It could be some stranger who's never seen my video before, and they might not have any interest in keyboard. So you got to find a way to appeal to everyone if you want to go viral, basically.
Yeah. So I guess for people who, we'll show an example for people on YouTube, but for anyone who's just listening, doesn't know, it's like you're playing notes on the keyboards, you're making music, but that's triggering a MIDI map on screen that you're making into basically an illustration or words or things like that, right? So there's
Basically I play notes and they get drawn on the keyboard. The higher the note, the higher it'll appear on screen, and I use that to kind of draw an image. Now, like I'm not the first to do that. MIDI art has been around for years, but my thing is I try to do it live. So instead of just creating it and then playing it in my software, mm-hmm. I'm hitting record and playing the notes in real time, and you'll see the image like be generated as I'm playing it. So I think, you know, people kind of like that, and that's why it's worked.
Well, this is something I was going to bring up later, but because you're also doing sometimes logos of video games or brand logos, you also have this cross audience synergy thing. So do the brands, do the video games end up sharing that stuff to their
crowd? It has happened. Usually, like, the Japanese companies don't, I don't know if they even see that stuff.
They're stingy with their sharing.
Actually, one of the creators of Pokemon shared my Pokemon logo one, which is cool, on Twitter, yeah, which was awesome. I did the Among Us logo, and they loved it. They shared it on Twitter. So it does happen sometimes. Yeah, and the gaming thing, it's, you know, it's just like I've always been a gamer, and I love that stuff. So for me, that's kind of why I started doing it. I wanted to create this sort of pixel art game stuff with MIDI.
I was just going to highlight, because you've mentioned it multiple times, that I think an important fact that you are appealing to several different audiences that are adjacent to your music, whether it's in the gaming community, mm-hmm. you know, logos. And then you also mentioned that there's this curiosity that people don't have to like music in order to, they want that curiosity loop to be completed when mm-hmm. they see your image taking shape. I just think that's important for people to understand that part of viral videos is the fact that there's appeal for multiple people or audiences, that it's not just, like you said, someone sitting there playing piano or keyboards. That's not going to go viral. Mm-hmm.
Some people have success with that just by taking requests and stuff. I see that on TikTok. Some
I've seen that too. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's really like hit or miss. They'll have one video do get millions of views and another like get no views, because it just depends on what's trending in the moment, what most people want to hear. To me, that's not very interesting. That's not something I personally want to do. You know?
Are there some really basic observations you could share about what you've seen from the different platforms? Like, this seems to work well on YouTube, but doesn't work on TikTok, or TikTok likes these things, or I've seen the algorithms change in this way over time. Any basic things you can, I mean, I'm sure you could go in super deep, but just like some general observations that you've had comparing some of the platforms and how they seem to work.
Yeah. So I think if we're talking about short form content, you know, reels and stuff like that, they're all pretty similar. I'd say TikTok is way more extreme than all the others, because if your video does well, it's going to spread to way more people than even Instagram or YouTube most of the time. But on the other hand, it works, you know, the other way as well. So if your video doesn't perform well, like, your followers are not even going to see it. Whereas on Instagram, I feel like it's more consistent. So more of your followers will see your posts, even if they don't go viral. Same on YouTube. But yeah, it constantly changes. Like, these platforms, the algorithms are constantly changing. So you got to just see what works. On YouTube, you know, they introduce the shorts mm-hmm. Feature, which is basically to compete with TikTok. And it's almost like an entirely different platform. So if I post a short, it'll get a certain amount of views. If I post a regular video, like a longer video, it'll get different number of views, and it's a different type of video as well. So if you're making longer videos, that's a whole other thing. Like, you gotta, I mean, it's kind of the same concept. You gotta grab people and get them to watch the whole thing. But I feel like in many ways it's harder with long videos, because gotta keep them engaged for 5 minutes, 10 minutes. Yeah.
Do you feel on YouTube that you get a little bit more leeway with those first seconds? I know YouTube still stresses like the first few seconds, but when you're on YouTube, chances are you've seen an ad and had to click through, and you right. feel that you have a little bit more time. Like, people are willing to give you a few extra seconds to make it interesting.
Not anymore. I feel like it used to be like that. But I look at my analytics, I see all the data and the retention and stuff like that. And if you don't get people interested immediately, they're just going to click off. They're going to click, you know, to the next video. So definitely doing things like long intros, logos in the beginning, stuff like that, that just doesn't work anymore. You got to get straight to the point and cut out anything that is not necessary, that is not absolutely necessary.
Mm-hmm. When you talked about short form platforms sort of all copying each other in some way, do you end up creating this stuff and editing it sort of on your own, and then you just post the same thing everywhere? Or do you use the in-app editing tools, or how much is it just a thing that gets syndicated everywhere?
Oh no, I do all my editing in Final Cut Pro, and yeah, I don't rely on the tools. I think those tools work if you're shooting the video with your phone and doing it on the app itself. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I don't do that because these are music videos, so there's a lot more work involved.
just one of many dozens or hundreds of those videos on your channel.
It's funny that you show that one, because that one, I did that one for my TikTok audience. Obviously, it's the TikTok logo.
Oh, and I played it on Instagram, right?
No, and that's fine. But then I decided to share it on Instagram and YouTube, and just the comments were so funny. It's like so many people like hating on TikTok. And I'm just thinking to myself, like, what's the difference? Like, you're on this platform, you're seeing the same content. Like,
right. Loyalists. What?
Yeah.
Since you're posting these things on multiple platforms, I'm assuming that you aren't posting on TikTok and then having it pushed to Instagram or things like that, or are
no,
you?
No, I do it individually on every platform.
I was curious because I've heard that even though I still see reels that are doing well on Instagram that have the TikTok logo, I've heard that Instagram does not like that watermark. And
yeah, if it has the watermark, it detects it and doesn't spread as much. So yeah, you got to make sure you don't. Also, the download from TikTok is going to be terrible quality, so you don't want to just repost that. Just post the original source on every platform.
I had some questions about just sort of the beginning brainstorming phase. Before we get to that, I almost feel like by saying that the MIDI art is your thing is like selling you a little short, though, because you also have, like, I don't know, like these sort of stunt videos where you're, you know, doing things with one hand that would take someone else five hands, or you're doing mashups with really interesting mashups. You do that auto-tuned duck quacking video. You know, there's plenty of other super entertaining stuff besides just like your, I don't know what you say, you're not your gimmick, but your thing, you know?
Yeah, you can call it that. That's fine. You know, like I said, the MIDI art is pretty new. I started doing that back like in July last year. So it's not even 1 year. And before that, I've been making other types of videos for years. So I like to try different things. For me, the most important thing is that I'm passionate about it. I have to enjoy the process. If I'm not enjoying it, then it's meaningless to me. So I'm always trying to find that balance between something I enjoy and the audience enjoys watching. And it has to tick both those boxes. If it's just one of them, it's like not worth making to me. You know what I mean?
Well, so how do you get your ideas?
Usually at like 2 a.m. when I'm lying in bed, I'm like, oh, that would be cool. And then I forget it the next day. No, but I just get these random ideas whenever, and I write them down. I have a long list of ideas, and then every once in a while, I'll look at it and I'll be like, oh, maybe I'll try that. Obviously, like recently, I've been doing a lot of the same thing, like the MIDI art, just because it works and people like it and I still enjoy making it. But I know it's just a matter of time until people kind of lose interest in that. They'll, you know, and I'll probably move on to something else. It's just the way it is.
When you get those ideas, do you have a fairly decent sense of how your audience will receive it? And do you also have a sense of what the ideal format is, like whether it should be 15 seconds or a live stream? Like, do you kind of see the whole picture?
Well, it's impossible to really predict what's going to happen and how the audience will respond. Sometimes I think a video will do really well and then it just flops, you know, that happens. And then sometimes something I made in like a few minutes ends up going viral. So it's really impossible to know. I think the key is just experimentation and just don't be afraid to try different things. Because, you know, if you just stick with one thing and it's not working, then chances are it's going to keep not working.
Seems.
I think you just answered every question about my own music career,
Chris. We've been hit. We wanted to have a little intervention, Chris. It's not working.
I love your post, by the way. I love your music, Chris.
Oh, thank you.
And I love that you've been doing some really funny stuff recently, which is awesome. I think the humor is like so sophisticated that probably a lot of people don't even get it.
My cousin writes me all the time and is like, I don't have any idea what you're talking about.
Well, now he can say it didn't go viral because I'm just too sophisticated.
Exactly.
My humor.
People,
it just went over everyone's heads. That's why.
I'm just way ahead of them.
Yeah, your audience will love if you say that. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Well, another question about that. You're saying you can't really always predict how something will do. What's your process for sort of going back and looking at the analytics to see what you want to do again, or just informing your production process?
So yeah, I think YouTube has the most detailed analytics. So I always go to YouTube for that. It'll tell you everything, like obviously the click-through rate, the audience retention, the number of subscribers who subscribe because of the video, it'll show you exactly a graph of the retention, where people are watching, where they're clicking off, where they're skipping. So I learn a lot from that. I can see, like, if people are skipping a certain portion of the video, okay, let's see what's going on there. I guess that's not interesting. Like, cut that out next time. Or if I see, like, people are just not clicking on this video, then this topic or whatever is just not interesting to people. So I'd say YouTube is best for that. It also gives you those that data in real time, whereas TikTok and Instagram, like, they have this really delayed response and it's way less detailed. So, you know, I'm always looking at that and trying to figure out what I can do. But at the same time, I want to make things that I enjoy creating. So I'm not just trying to follow the latest trends or whatever, you know.
So when you say you're looking at the analytics and you might see something, oh, people are skipping, I'll cut that out next time. What kind of things does that typically tend to be that you're realizing, oh, I should have just cut that out? Is it just the segment goes too long or what is it?
It's several things. Like, I used to put little intros on my video. I realized that doesn't work. People are either like just skipping 10 seconds in or just clicking off, which is not what you want. So no intros, no long outros either. Once you're like, you get to the point or you finish the song or whatever, that's it. Just end it there. No, like, thanks for watching, guys, blah, 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 because people just don't watch that. And then if it's a talking video, then really you got to trim it as much as possible. Like any like ahs and ums, you know, any pauses and stutters and stuff, like trim them. Anything you repeating, like if you see you already said this in the video, like cut that out. Just really be as, just really like go be extreme with that.
That's good advice.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's kind of sad in a way that like, that's what you have to do. But that's just, you know, some people even watch YouTube on like double speed, which is incredible.
Oh, they do. There's people listening to this podcast right now that listen to it on double speed.
Yeah, they can hear the future. Yeah,
these guys are too dang slow. I've got places to be. I'm busy, people. I don't have time for it.
And they're listening to this podcast while playing a game on their phone and
driving a car.
And driving. Yeah. I got another question. So you go to analytics for lessons about what you can do better. Do you get inspiration from other people who are doing things in music theory or music production, video content, like what's his name? Jacob Collier or
what's his name? That guy.
That guy.
Definitely. I'm all the time inspired by what other people are doing. Jacob's a good example because, you know, he's obviously a genius and he's constantly like raising the bar for everyone. Yeah, I'm constantly looking at what other musicians are doing. At the same time, I try not to copy people and just kind of take the inspiration, but not like, I'm never like, oh, he's doing this, so I'm going to do that too. You know what I mean? Just try to like see what works and then find your own way to do it.
What is, as far as, you know, you've got your own process for coming up with ideas. And we mentioned, you know, a lot of artists, something's not working and they, you know, to try things, to test things. But what, for someone starting out trying to do videos, what are some tips you'd give them? Like, because it feels like, you know, you make a post or two, they bomb, you feel like you waste an enormous amount of time. Where can you even start to feel like you're starting in the right place with how you're creating ideas? And is there a field of play where testing in this arena is going to work, anything outside of it isn't going to work?
Well, I'd say that even the videos that bomb, it's never a waste of time because you can always learn a lot from it. Plus, video production is a skill that takes time to develop. So chances are, if you're just starting to make videos, chances are your first videos are not going to do that well, but you're going to learn a ton from it. You're going to learn how to shoot better video, get better lighting, edit, do all the stuff, the audio, you know, you're going to figure out the different formats and the platforms and what kind of files you need and stuff like that. There's a lot to learn. So I'd say just do it and don't overthink it. Just, if you want to start doing this, just start making videos and you'll very quickly learn what's working, what you can improve. I mean, if I look at videos of mine from a year ago, I already see like things that I would do way better nowadays. So honestly, yeah, just go for it, start making videos. And it's probably going to take you a while to figure out how to do it, and you're going to constantly improve as well, which is great. I hope that answers the question. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think that combined with the analytics, I mean, artists, you got to start somewhere. And I think the analytics thing, I think, is important because I think a lot of artists probably don't, they bomb. The video feels like it didn't do anything, but then they don't follow up and look, hey, you know, it was going fine until 5 seconds when this happened and everybody tuned out.
Yeah. So, and I've made a really bad mistake. Like I had one video where the song was like the first minute and then 7 minutes of me talking about it. Like I've done that. and guess what? That video bombed because no one cared. So yeah, like you're constantly learning. And like I said, the algorithms are changing too. So you got to be on top of it. There are some people I recommend following on YouTube as well, some channels who are dedicated to YouTube growth and learning this stuff. There's one called Channel Makers, which is pretty new, which is really good. There's some older channels as well, like vidIQ. And there are a few channels that are really helpful in that regard. And they're constantly making new videos, telling you what's changing in the algorithm, what's working, what's not working. So
in like the flow of your musical life, you wake up at 2 a.m. or you're awake at 2 a.m. You have this idea. Do you go and start executing it the next day, or do you save them up and try to have like a production weekend where you create a bunch of stuff at once?
I usually cannot create a bunch of stuff at once because my videos just take days to make, you know, sometimes weeks. So I write down the idea. If I feel like super inspired, or if it's like a time sensitive thing where it doesn't happen often with me, but sometimes it'll be like some trending topic or something and I'll be like, oh, I got to make this right now. Then I'll make it immediately. But otherwise, I'll just write it down. And whenever I feel like it, I'll do it.
Well, so then you said sometimes they take weeks to make. Like, what is the prep time? How much are you practicing? How much are you shooting the video? How much editing?
Yeah, well, it depends on the type of video. Like if we're talking about the short MIDI art stuff, it's usually between 1 to 4 days of work. So, you know, I got to first compose the piece of music, which can take me a couple of days, depending on how long it is, how complex it is. And then I got to learn how to play it. So I got to practice it, which can take hours or days. And then I got to shoot the video, get a take I'm happy with, mix the audio, edit the video, all that stuff. So it can take a while. For longer videos, it really depends what I'm doing. Like if it's a cover, then I mean, you know, Chris, because you make music as well. So you can spend sometimes weeks on just one song. So it really depends.
Yeah, that's always so weird to know where the trade-off is too after. It's like, whoa, I spent 25 hours on a snare drum sound. And then other times it's like, whoa, I completed the whole song in an hour.
Exactly. It's
I don't know why.
Every time. Yeah. It's different every time. And then you see people who are just making like videos like this with their phone. It takes them 10 seconds and they get way more attention. The way it is, you know?
That was actually something else I'm wondering, like I don't even know if this is a question for you so much as just like, it's bizarre to see that tension between lack of production quality sometimes being an asset. If it looks more tossed together or more informal, people are more inclined to share it sometimes.
Which
is nice, I guess.
And there's another thing I've noticed, like just in the last year or so, is that people are way more suspicious of everything on the internet, which I totally understand why. But I'd say like a third, or maybe not a third, maybe like a fifth of the, like 20% of the comments on my channel are like, it's fake, it's fake, it's fake. You know what I mean? It's like people don't even believe anything anymore. And at first I wasn't sure why, but then I started looking at TikToks myself and yeah, there's a lot of fake stuff over there.
Yes. So a lot of those live looping videos. I'm like, that is way too, you didn't live loop. I'm not saying you, I mean.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's a lot of fake stuff, not just in music and everything. And I think what you were talking about, the low production quality, that kind of makes people maybe more inclined to believe that it's real. It's like, oh, he just shot this with his phone. It's not some produced, doctored piece of footage or whatever.
Well, I like that you're open to all different kinds of content angles, because that first video we showed before you came on was for the haters. Basically like, hey, there's all these people doubting that I actually did this. So I'm going to turn this into content. Let me prove to you how I loved it. It's like, it was educational. It was confrontational. It was impressive.
Which video are you talking about?
The Super Mario one where you're like, people didn't think I did this. Let me show you how.
I used to get kind of pissed off when people would say my stuff is fake. I don't care anymore. I actually find it really amusing now. So fine.
It's not you, it's them. They just have trust issues.
Exactly. So yeah, I don't mind anymore. And I do like live streams and stuff. So if someone really wants to fact check, it's easy to see. You know what I mean? It's like, if they're just writing it's fake, then they're just too lazy to actually do a little bit of research.
Yeah. Well, you've mentioned some of the processes. What equipment are you using? Like camera, like you capture the video and audio and then you're putting them into Final Cut. Is that?
Yeah, I mean, my equipment for video is just this.
Okay, so all the videos are with your iPhone?
I mean, I've tried shooting with a fancier camera. It just didn't look as good because the fancier camera is usually like their focus range is, a lot kind of narrower. So for this kind of thing, I need people to be able to see everything in focus, the screen and my hands and stuff. And like right now, nothing beats like just 4K 60 frames per second video using like a good phone. And obviously the audio I record in my DAW, then I sync them together in Final Cut, do a little bit of color grading if I need to, and that's it. It's like really, the editing of these MIDI videos is really simple. All I really do is I try to find an angle where you can see everything, where you can see every note I play and you can see what's happening on the screen if it's a MIDI art thing. So I just try to find that angle. I try to set up the lighting. So it can be challenging with the MIDI art because the laptop screen is very reflective. So just to find a way to not get the reflection distracting too much. So I don't do anything too special, really. I just try to get good lighting, get a good angle, and shoot.
Can I play another one of your videos that will... It'll
Hopefully
highlight,
it's in sync.
it'll highlight the keyboard, of course, but I kind of saw this as an opposite of Jacob Collier kind of thing where, well, I'll just play it and hold on.
Music theory for you. So you may have heard about the whole tone scale. But have you ever heard of the no tone scale?
That is so stupid. It's genius.
I actually, thanks for reminding me. I got to repost that as a reel because I never did.
I love how there's like a time lapse thing. You're still going.
Right. I made that when the pandemic just started and like, you know, everyone was just super depressed. I thought I'd make something a little more like lighthearted and funny, you know.
What? And so many of those music theory driven videos are all like, I don't know. It's like, oh, I have perfect pitch. I can hear a glass clink and tell you the note. There's always like this, like, can they
Humble
pull it
bragging.
Off?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then in this, you're like, I'm going to make this so just one thing. Love it.
I love when people see that stuff and just take it seriously. You know, I don't know. I don't like that scale so much.
How many comments did you get saying that's not a real scale?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, a lot of people, like most people get it. They know it's a joke, but some people just don't get it.
So a question about, let's say you finished the video and now it's time to post it. So what's that like? What are you doing to optimize your post in terms of captions, hashtags, time of day, any of that kind of stuff, thumbnails?
I try to post like early in the day. I don't know how much it matters nowadays with the way the algorithms work, but I think it's still, you know, better to post when your followers are up and more likely to see it on the app. And then... yeah, as far as hashtags and stuff like that, I try to add a few relevant hashtags, no more than maybe 3 or 4. Honestly, I've noticed that it doesn't really make such a difference anymore. Because, I mean, how many people actually follow hashtags nowadays? It's like, do you follow any hashtags on Instagram?
No, I do not.
Like, no one really does. You know what I mean? It's like,
it seems like they don't do much anymore, except when you use big ones that you get a bunch of bots saying, promote this song.
Yeah,
this
exactly.
Song. Other than exactly. that, it doesn't seem like it does anything.
Right. The only thing that really matters nowadays is watch time. And, you know, if people watch your whole video or most of it, then the algorithm will be like, oh, this is a good video. I'm going to show it to more people. If not, just kills it right there. So that's the main factor, really.
How about YouTube thumbnails? Like, how much time do you spend?
I try to spend a lot of time on the thumbnail. I'm no expert on thumbnails, but that is really important when it comes to YouTube, because YouTube, unlike the other platforms, people have to first click on your video. You know, they have to see the thumbnail and the title, and they have to be like, oh, I want to watch this, as opposed to Instagram, where they're just scrolling and it'll autoplay. So yeah, you got to make an appealing, alluring thumbnail, which is, it's just a lot harder than it seems. I used to just like let YouTube auto generate a thumbnail, which is not good. So yeah, and I'm constantly learning from some of those channels I mentioned earlier. So they do a lot of videos about how to make better thumbnails. So I definitely recommend checking that out. But when it comes to YouTube Shorts, which is like the TikTok thing, that it doesn't matter as much, because it's like an entirely different platform. That's just people scrolling like TikTok.
Hmm. Well, you mentioned one of the channels was vidIQ. What were some other ones that you recommend people checking out?
Channel Makers. That's the name of a newer channel. The guy who runs it, his name is Nate. And like, he's just really, really great. He'll constantly review other people's videos and explain exactly what's working. He'll do polls. He'll ask people to submit their own videos and like their retention graphs, and he'll review them and critique them and stuff. And there's so much to learn from him. So definitely recommend checking out his channel.
Do you make a habit of sort of monitoring comments in the first hour or whatever after you post something, or do you just post it and go about your life and then come back later?
I mean, I read all the comments, not just in the first hour. I don't just sit there looking, you know, waiting for comments.
Uh-huh.
When I have time, if I have a few minutes, I'll just go on the YouTube or whatever app and read the comments, respond to questions. I always do my best to respond to everyone. I think that's super important. I see far too many creators who just like ignore their audience, which I think is a terrible idea. So definitely, if someone takes the time to write something nice, then thank them. If they ask a question that you haven't already answered 1,000 times, then respond to them.
Do you rely like solely on organic reach, or do you ever put money behind boosting or even just like advertising to totally cold audiences?
I used to boost on Facebook, and I regret doing that. It's like waste of money. I remember like looking back in my Facebook ads thing and seeing how much money I spent over the years, and like, oh my God, it's like such a waste of money, because it's just not worth it. I think advertising is only worth it if you have a product to sell, so you can actually make that money back. You know what I mean? Advertising just to get views or just to get streams or whatever, it's not worth it, because you're basically investing money and then not making it, not recouping it, or not making any of it back. I don't think it's a good idea. I think you should rely on the algorithms and the organic reach and just figure out what the algorithm likes, or, you know, that's actually wrong to phrase it that way. It's what people like, because that's what the algorithm shows. Yeah. People. Yeah.
Are you posting this content on Facebook as well, or do you not necessarily?
No, I do. I do. Okay. Actually, Facebook introduced Reels as well. So you can post Reels on Facebook now. I've only tried a couple of them, and they haven't performed super well. But I post everything on Facebook as well. I have an audience there, and I know they like seeing it there.
Does the performance, is it harder to reach people organically on Facebook compared to what you're seeing?
Okay. It is, because Facebook, you know, there's a reason why so many people have left Facebook. It just became harder and harder over the years to reach your audience. And instead, they just tried to do too many things at once, I think. They tried to be everything in one app, and it just became kind of overwhelming and confusing for a lot of people. And some posts still do well, but it's a lot harder to reach even your own audience than Instagram, I think.
While we're talking about giant platforms, I want to share one more of your videos. Which made me crack up so much.
What song is that? Is that on Spotify?
No, I was just testing my keyboard. Why would that be on Spotify?
Dude, that beat is sick. Is that on Spotify?
Dude, I just started working on this. Of course it's not on Spotify.
Spotify?
Is that on Spotify?
Spotify?
Is that on Spotify?
Is that on Spotify?
Is that on Spotify?
Spotify?
Is that on Spotify?
Spotify?
That's it's funny you're that's sharing true. All the skits. I mean,
that's really, it's really funny.
Just okay. When you turn around, why would that be on Spotify?
I just testing my keyboard. Yeah.
The reason I made that was just because I wanted it was the same around the same time as the other one. I wanted to make something funny, but also it's just like a question that. It's constantly, you get that comment on everything. You know, I can make like a little demo, 5-second demo of something and people will ask, is that on Spotify? So that's why I made it. I find it funny how it, like everyone just expects everything to be on Spotify. You know, like
not everything needs a proper place on the mantle.
Exactly.
Okay. So I wrote down some questions for the people who are, for the haters in your comments. So one is, do you ever worry that your efforts in video are kind of diluting your more serious original artist brand or whatever you'd call it?
No, not really. Because if I only focused on music, then no one would hear it. So, you know, do I want to like focus on art, only art, and ignore the entertainment side of it and have only a handful of people listen to it? Or do I want to kind of split my time between doing both and then have a lot more people actually listen to my music, then definitely the latter.
What about the people who say, oh, that's just a gimmick?
Well, I mean, you could call it a gimmick. I don't mind a gimmick. You can call anything a gimmick, really. It doesn't matter. To me, the only thing that matters is, am I passionate about it and are people passionate about it?
You mentioned that you had tried to get people off platform and that's a challenge. What have you tried that to in order to try and get people to move off and check out some of your other music?
Well, for example, on TikTok, I've done a video where like, hey, here's a snippet of a video you want to, and the full thing is on YouTube, you know, link in bio or whatever. And no one clicks on it. Maybe two people out of a million will click on it. You know what I mean? So that just doesn't work. Instagram, sometimes if you do a story link, it's like, click here to say, sometimes people will click, but still it's like such a tiny percentage. It's almost not worth doing. It's like I said, these apps, they don't like when people click off. So they're going to show those posts to fewer people. So
yeah, it is kind of a challenge because if you become this channel that's really good at getting people off the app, they're going to be like, screw this guy's videos. We're not showing.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think the takeaway from that is try to make a complete experience, create a complete experience for your audience on every platform. So they don't have to go to another platform to experience it. And if you're lucky, then people like what you're doing enough. Maybe they'll go buy your music or buy your merch or whatever, but it's not easy.
So if you kind of work from the assumption that people aren't going to leave that platform, they're not necessarily going to consume your own original music to the degree that you would like, what's the point? Is it a kind of resume that gets you other kinds of gigs, or is it just fun?
Yeah, well, it's fun, but it does. I think over time, you can build a connection with your audience. And when there, you actually build that connection, and it takes time. It doesn't happen with one video. You know, it can take months for one person to be like, okay, I've seen like 20 of this guy's videos. I kind of feel a connection with him. Let's go check out his music on Spotify. Let's go to Bandcamp, buy his album or whatever. So it does happen, but I think you need to not treat your social media as an advertising platform. You're not just promoting your music, but you're giving value to your audience. I think that's the most important thing. Create something that they will enjoy, and stop trying to sell yourself. Stop trying to sell your music. Just try to give them, provide value.
Are you monetizing on YouTube? I know your YouTube channel has well over 100,000 subscribers. And
yeah. So I am monetized, but unfortunately most of my views come from shorts, and shorts are not monetized. There's no ads on them. So yeah, my video that has like 10 million views made like $30.
Oh boy.
Yeah. These apps are trying to help creators by giving them these bonuses, creator funds, stuff like that. So TikTok gives me a little money. YouTube will sometimes give me a little bonus, but it's really very little compared to what you can make from like real YouTube or longer YouTube videos that have ads on them.
A lot of your YouTube stuff is drawing on, they're either covers or mashups or like maybe derivative works or something, but you're getting into that realm where like the compositions aren't always entirely yours. So I imagine that would cut into some revenue opportunity.
Yeah, well, I hope Nintendo are not listening to this podcast, but I do a lot of video game covers, and most of the, at least the Japanese video game companies, they don't copyright claim. At least that has been my experience, but that could change anytime. You know,
Nintendo, it'll change after they hear this interview.
Exactly. That's what I was saying. Like, I hope they don't listen to it.
Okay, here's my last difficult question. How many keyboards is too many keyboards?
You know, my answer would be different a few years ago when I was kind of obsessed with buying as much gear as possible. But right now, I try to use as minimal a setup as possible. So I'd say, yeah, just don't buy just for the sake of buying stuff. Not just keyboards, any kind of gear. You know what I mean? Learn how to use what you have as well as you can. And don't buy things unless you really need them. Don't waste your money. Because I used to buy like so much gear and then end up just spending all my time either learning how to use new gear or fantasizing about the next piece of gear.
And never happy.
Yeah.
I'm never happy and always being like, oh, when I get that, then I'll be able to make stuff. You know what I mean? It's like, then you keep procrastinating because you're always like, oh, I just need this piece of equipment and then I'll be ready. No, just use what you have. Use your phone if that's what you have. As you can see, you can make stuff that millions of people will enjoy even with your phone. So don't worry about that.
Cool. Got any other questions, Kevin?
I think there's a lot of great insights in there. And
we should ask what's the next big thing? Are you going on tour or?
Yeah, so I do tour with Todd Rundgren, as you mentioned. So I'm going on tour again with him in June and July. And as for my own stuff, I'm working on an 8-bit album.
Oh, sweet. Love 8-bit
video game.
Yeah, love it.
Cool, thank you. So yeah, I released one song like that last year, and it's by far my most streamed song on all the platforms. And I had a lot of fun making it, so I'm making a full album like that.
What are you using to generate the sounds for that?
I just use my DAW and some plugins. Yeah. Like, I'm not doing it on like original, like an NES. Some people will do it on the.
I went to the length of trying to make a NES adapter thing. Bought a kit.
Oh, cool.
It failed miserably.
I think you can buy something like that.
Yeah.
Now, that's for me, that's like way too much work, you know, that the you have to input the notes like one at a time on a tracker.
Yes.
Like that's not how I want to make music. I want to play.
Well, we'll also in the YouTube comments and in the podcast notes, we'll put links to all your social and your website and stuff so people can find you and follow along, laugh along. Yeah. Thanks for doing this.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. This was a pleasure. Thanks. Have a great day, guys. Thanks so much.
See ya. All right. Well, thanks to Gil for sharing all that insight into how he's making things happen, making videos go viral very consistently. And you should definitely check it out because even if you don't do something similar to what he's doing or try to do those kind of videos, you can start to see consistency and things that are working for him and that he's obviously zeroing in on over time as you watch his videos. And I think that's one of the big tips he gave that I think is very helpful is like cutting things out that you got to get to the point, got to make stuff that lands quickly and that people stay interested and keep watching. And if you've got questions or comments, or you've been doing something with video that's been working really well, you can call our listener line at 360-524-2209 or email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com. And we have some calls right now. So let's get to them.
Hey, Kevin and Chris. This is Daniel in Denver from the band Chariots and Charioteers. You can look us up on Spotify, Instagram, what have you. And I'm a big fan of you guys. I emailed in a few months ago and you guys really helped us out. So I'm back again with another question. And that is about whether or not to do the practice of releasing a single to streaming with the previous single on the same release after that. Like, say I released song X last month, and now I'm releasing song Y, but the single release for song Y has song Y, but followed by song X on the same release. I hope that makes sense. It seems to be the thing that a lot of people are doing now. I saw, like, Big Thief did this with the singles leading up to their album. I think Churches did it leading up to their album, where they, like, release every new song they release has, like, all of the previous songs they've released followed up, like, on the same release. So, yeah, I'm kind of wondering, would you guys recommend doing this for our upcoming singles? Any, like, benefits or drawbacks you see to this approach? I imagine it's so that Spotify will just, like, keep playing your music. Like, it'll just keep playing the same song that you've already released after that. But I would love to hear what you think of this, if it's a good idea, if there's any drawbacks to it. Love to hear your advice. Thank you so much, guys.
All right. Thanks for the call.
It was essentially like describing the waterfall strategy, that
yeah,
album slowly grows with each release containing the previous ones.
I think he was actually just talking about releasing singles, like what you and I have been doing, like dropping a couple single before the album comes out.
And yeah, although I think he's saying with each single, that release has the other songs on it. Like, so it's like a growing album. One yeah. song, then two songs, then three.
Yeah, which you can only do, you'll only see like major label artists attempting that, because you really have to, I've talked to people and you have to basically hack the XML feed to do that.
If you do it as the same release, but
yes,
you could sign them all up as separate releases with a growing yes. collection of songs.
Yes. The strategy we recommend is having a couple singles set up the album release. So we're in April. So maybe if I had an album coming out in July, I'd have a single drop in May, a single drop in June, and then the whole album come out in July containing those singles as well. That's a strategy I highly recommend. There's a couple reasons for it. One, per release, Spotify only lets you pitch one track. So that'll allow you to pitch different singles through the Spotify for Artists tool, which will push it through Release Radar to all your followers. So that's a benefit to doing that. That's why I think that the waterfall release, Chris, that you're describing, I think why that died, I haven't seen it much lately, is because Spotify only lets you pitch one track per release. And obviously major label artists, that's a different story sometimes, but it complicates things, because that's not how it, you know, that was just a hack that somebody figured out. Oh, if we do this, we can keep adding tracks to update the release. So it keeps adding week by week.
Yeah. Well, and if you are doing each of those as a separate release that has a growing track count, you do run into that weird thing of like, suddenly you have multiple appearances of the same song, which if the ISRC is the same, Spotify keeps track of it all. But just from a fan perspective, they go to your profile and suddenly they see the same song in five different places. It's a little confusing, which means then you have more logistical work to take down your previous releases that have the same stuff. And then that's just more for you to worry about, as opposed to you could just release two singles and then an album or whatever, and then put them all on a playlist that is organized however you want it. And then yeah. anytime you share that same link, it's always your songs in the order you want them according to your most recent goals. So
that's when I saw the last time I saw somebody do that waterfall release thing where it kept building, I found it to be very confusing, the experience, because what a link led to kept changing and it was just confusing to me. Sometimes as artists, we try to get cute and funny or fancy to have a little gimmick, and all it is confusing. So it doesn't really help. It's just a gimmick at times. All right. Hope that answer helped. Let's move on to the next call.
Hi, Kevin and Chris. This is Ben Shaw. My music's at benjaminshawmusic.com. Just wanted to call and say that your constant marketing really worked, and I've just bought my first tickets ever to the DIY Musician Conference in Austin. Very excited to go check that out. I just had a couple of quick questions about it, if you don't mind answering them. When I was buying the ticket, I got the early bird pricing, $99. Great deal. And I noticed that there were other ticket options available, like little add-ons for like $20, just different sit-downs with different people. I was wondering if you could describe quickly what that all was, if that's like a separate purchase, or if with the early bird price, did that already kind of get figured in somehow, or what, however that works. And also, if you could briefly just go over what the kind of prospective, you know, calendar for the actual conference itself, just to get an idea. Again, this is going to be my first time ever going to one of these, so I just want to make sure that I can sort of plan my day, when I need to get there, all that fun stuff. So if you don't mind answering that question about the DIY Musician Conference, I'd really appreciate it. Once again, this is Ben Shaw, BenjaminShawMusic.com, for all that fun stuff. And thanks for everything you do, guys. Really appreciate the podcast. Have a great day.
Thanks for the call, Ben. Some good questions there.
It almost sounds like we paid him to call and
yeah,
tee us up.
Yeah, that's right. Actually, it's a good question, because if you've never been to a conference before, it comes fast and furious once you're there. And if you don't sort of have a plan, know what you're getting into, the weekend will fly by and you'll miss out on some good stuff. So the first question about the $20 one-on-one mentoring session thing, that is extra outside of the ticket. And the reason we charge for that is because we get these industry professionals to make sure that you get real good guidance from real people that have real experience. And we want to value their time. We don't pay them. We give them a little parting gift, like headphones or something. But we found that if we didn't charge for that mentoring session, people wouldn't show up.
Yeah, they'd like blitz the sign up thing, reserve a spot, and then just totally flake. And then the expert who, you know, is volunteering 15 minutes or whatever, they're just sitting there waiting for people. So,
yeah. So that's an extra fee for that. It's worth it. And you will know who you're matched up with. I forget exactly how we do it, but you will know ahead of time so you can prepare. I think the main thing with the conference in general, as Ben said, $99 is an amazing deal. So go get your tickets at DIYMusicianCon.com. But the more you're prepared and have an understanding of the schedule ahead of time, which we will have on the website, the better your conference experience. Plan to not sleep much. Plan to be really exhausted at the end of the week in a good way.
Get there on Thursday, because yes, we will have some informal, I don't know. We'll be at the hotel Thursday night is what I'm saying. And then you want to be fresh on Friday morning for the kickoff. And it's a full day of, you know, learning, workshops, stuff to do. There's going to be performances during the day and at night on Friday. Saturday, kind of repeat the daytime activities. Do we know what our plan is for Saturday night?
To be determined.
Yeah.
To be determined.
And then Sunday is like a half day, but it starts, you know, still on the early side.
It feels like a full day by the time it's done.
And it's done by one or two, I think.
Yeah, it's like, whoa, it feels like that was a long day, but it's only 2 o'clock. Yeah.
And I was going to say one thing about those $20 mentor slots is we only let participants sign up for one. So it's not the type of thing where you buy five for whatever. You just one per person or per attendee.
Yeah. And, you know, we'll do a preview episode on the podcast, a conference preview episode, when it gets closer to the conference, probably like June or July, we'll do that just to give people an understanding of the things that are happening, how to prepare, how to make the most of it, because it's going to be a good one. I'm really excited about this one.
We should also probably say, while we're talking about logistics and price, if you get a hotel room at the event space for what, two nights, I think, then yes, your ticket is free. So, and can we refund the ticket if you already purchased?
Yeah. Yeah. There's instructions on the website. So okay, yeah, if you get a hotel room at the hotel, if you get at least two room nights, your conference ticket will be free. And there's, if you go to DIYMusicianCon.com, I believe it's on the hotel tab, you will see info about that. So once you book your hotel, you just send us the info and we refund you the tickets if you already paid for it. So yeah, and staying at the hotel, that's going to be the hub of everything. The open mic's going to be there. There's several places where we're working with the hotel to have music happening. It's going to be the spot. The lobby has all these places to sit and hang out. It's a massive lobby. It has several restaurants and all. Yeah, it's just going to be the place to be.
Yeah, and be on the lookout in your email inbox for a form, a link to a form to sign up to play all of those performance opportunities, because early bird ticket people get the first chance to apply.
Yep. All right, we've got one more call. Let's do it.
Hey, guys. I absolutely love the show. And I have a conundrum or a question that I've been trying to figure out for forever. My name is Sol, and my question was, does the composition royalties, the songwriter royalties, are they paid evenly with the master royalties? I've been trying to figure this out. For example, say if my song is streamed and whatever money I make from 1,000 streams, does it split evenly? Like, does, and if say somebody owns 50% of the song, do they get 50% of the streaming money? But what if somebody buys it on iTunes and then that's like a physical purchase? Do they get 50% of that royalty? Because, you know, mechanical royalties and other royalties. I've been doing so much research. So I know how to register. I know how to give everybody a split. Now is actually splitting the money made from these various royalties and entities that pay you. Is there any easy way to figure this out? Am I just supposed to stumble until somebody sues me? But no, thank you guys for your time. And yeah, I love the show. Keep it up. I listen to it all the time. Bye.
Good question. And there, you know, it's complicated. That's one thing. The way everything pays out is not the same. And what gets determined for each portion is not the same.
Yeah, I was just going to say the short answer is no, they're not the same. They're not equal. And they're very much consumption dependent. So like on streaming, 50 some percent of the royalty goes to the sound recording rights owner, leaving 15 or some percent for the publisher songwriter. And that's how it works in streaming. But then if you look at like terrestrial radio in the United States, the sound recording rights holder gets nothing. It all goes to the publishers and songwriters. So there's very little consistent logic to it.
Well, and also the things like social platforms, they pay out in a similar fashion to what you just mentioned, but the percentages might be different. Like YouTube, it's X percent goes to the recording, X percent's the publishing, and then part of it goes to YouTube. And that can vary platform by platform. And even on some platforms, they started paying out for the master recording first, and then they didn't have publishing come online until later. So it's a mess. It's a mess. I mean, this is one of the biggest issues with the music business now, that there's all these alternate payout methods that are like advertising based, which isn't technically how by law these things are supposed to pay out, but it's sort of the industry's made compromises with tech platforms because they've proven themselves to be valuable. But for streaming services, you know, we say for every $5 that you make from streaming for the master recording, about an additional dollar would go towards the publishing. And also, I think as far as answering the question is about splitting, it's like, are these people that are just in your band? Are these people that you wrote songs with? Are they music producers? It's understanding what kind of cut you're giving people. Because like if I'm in a band, which I am, I would just simplify it and say, hey, we're all going to get X percent, or this is what's going to happen with the money. It's just going to go towards making new records. So we don't get too technical about, well, I wrote this song, so I'm going to slice out my 5 cents here and my dollar over there.
Well, to simplify it in a way, it sounded like they were in the United States or Canada. So if you use CD Baby Pro Publishing, that covers you for sound recording royalties you'd be getting through distribution, covers you for songwriter publishing stuff, social video monetization. And then besides that, if you sign up for Sound Exchange, you're pretty much covered for almost all the usages out there. And then it's just a matter of when you sign up your music, accounting for any collaborators you have, but you don't really need to actively worry about percentages and stuff overall of where the money's come from. We'll just collect it all. We do that work and pay it in one accounting.
Yeah, I think, you know, with collaborators and paying people, it all starts with whatever agreement you have with them, because it could be anything. You know, it depends on what the person's role is, what they're contributing, what you have decided is going to be the deal, and then sticking to that. So I think that's why there's so much interest around certain things with using blockchain technology to solve some of this, because if you do have a true ledger that is accurate and the information inputted into it is accurate and the money just automatically flows to the right people based on whatever activity happens, that would be ideal. We're still not quite there yet. All right.
One fine day.
All right. Well, thanks for those calls. Again, if you want to call the listener line, you can do so at 360-524-2209, or you can email us podcast@cdbabypodcast.com.
We can't leave this episode without saying that next episode is our 300th episode.
Is it? I thought this was this is 298.
Oh, crap. Let's skip 299 like it's an unlucky 13th floor in a hotel and go right to 300. Anyways, soon 300.
Fun fact about the Hilton in Austin, it does have a 13th floor
and a rooftop pool. See you in Austin.
Yeah, I think we've made it to the end, Chris.
All right. See you next time.
All right. See ya.
You've been listening to the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, USA.